Good evening. Welcome to the program. Glad you are with us here in a sleety, icy Mid-South. Everything has closed down in the Mid-South. All your office supply stores, your banks, your post office, everything is closed. And they're calling for a third wave of sleet and snow and rain. So starting tonight. But here we are. Glad you're with us. All right, going to have on with me tonight Pete Santelli and Dr. Naomi Wolf. And Delta was in here. I don't know where she went, the studio lab. I tell you what, I was just giving her a lot of love. How many of you have a lab? And your lab, of course, she's my dog. So I was giving her a bunch of love because she's so loyal and follows me everywhere. And so I was giving her a bunch of love, and she was sitting at my feet, and I was rubbing her all over her neck and chest and ears and just loving her up. Because, you know, the dogs, by the way, if you study dogs, they have these nerves in their ears and their head and everything right there. And it does something to them neurologically in a positive way when you rub their ears and their head and their neck. But anyway, I was just giving her all kinds of love. And I ended up with dog hair all over my hands, and I ended up with it on my face. And so now I feel like I'm itching because I got Delta hair all over me. So anyway, I'm scratching and rubbing my nose because I got dog hairs making me tickle. But anyway, what would we do without, man alive, it's making me, what would we do without our dogs, right? And of course, those of you who have cats, I know, I have one too. So there you go. Someone said, you don't seem like a cat person. I'm not really, but this one is more like a dog. This cat is more like a dog. So anyway, all right. You have to sometimes stop and enjoy the small things in life with all the seriousness going on in the world. That's one of the things people say. How do you do that job day in and day out? Oh, so negative. Well, it helps if you have a close family and great pets, right? A close family and great pets and some good friends. All right. Joining me now is Dr. Naomi Wolf. I promised that I was going to go through her book some more. It's a very important book, and I have, and I've even made some slides. I think we're going to have a very interesting conversation before we go to Pete Santelli tonight. Dr. Naomi Wolf, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Brandon. I appreciate it.
Got a lot of great feedback about our interview the other night.
Good. I'm glad.
So let's get to it. I did make some PowerPoint slides tonight. You know, we could talk forever because there's so much in this book, but I'll just throw the slides up. We'll talk. I have some video clips I want to play. I want to get some of your perspective on some things as well, because you made a very important move the other night about bioweapons and this being a bioweapon and a bioattack, both the COVID and the bioweapon of the shot. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the CIA and the intelligence community as well in this, if you don't mind, because of the fact that the CIA, according to numerous reports, was a part of lockstep, you know, in the October, right before this all broke out. And so you see these players involved, you have to ask yourself, what is going on? I mean, our CIA is supposed to be protecting us from this kind of thing. I'll come back to all that, but do you want to make an initial comment on your thoughts on any of that?
I mean, I don't have any direct knowledge of the intelligence community being involved in this. That's kind of not our focus. You know, we've been kind of narrowly focused on the Pfizer documents. And sorry, I, you know, like you, we're both like operating with like things to deal with physically. I have a broken shoulder, as I mentioned last time. I'm in a sling, so everything's a little bit, less harmonious than usual for me physically. But there's nothing in the documents themselves that speaks to whatever the geopolitical pressures may be externally. It's just narrowly Pfizer and the FDA and the horrible things that Pfizer did with the oversight of the FDA. But I know that there's a lot of news coming out about, you know, the links to the Department of Defense generally of this program. And I'm certainly, you know, open to listening to it. I mean, I don't know or understand yet fully, you know, how our defense community could possibly be involved in something that mostly has injured the citizens of the United States, right? That doesn't make sense to me. It does make sense to me in the sense that, you know, this administration is completely hostage, as you and I have discussed, to foreign powers. And new news just came out about that today, I believe, tying Hunter Biden to Meta Biota and to the Wuhan lab and Peter Daszak, which is, you know, yet another turn of this insane tangle of corruption. But the actual intelligence community, I really don't know anything about their involvement. Yeah. And I understand why they would be involved, you know, on the homeland, because the CIA is supposed to be operating outside of the United States and not inside of the United yeah. States, not aimed at us. What are your thoughts?
Well, let me play for you. I'm trying to figure it out, and I am getting too many people who, you know, I respect and are from all political persuasions, right? I like to look and talk to people from all political persuasions, particularly so that not everything's coming from the left or the right. But now all of a sudden now we have people who say, look, let's set aside these arguments about this and that. But hey, on this issue, boom. And you're like, okay, we have too much consensus coming from people on the left, the right, the center, you know, libertarians. Everybody. And then I look at someone like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and I'm not sure what your thoughts are there in regards to some of his work and exposing Fauci and stuff.
Love him.
Yeah. And of course, I see what he's doing with his work with Children's Defense Fund and all. And of course, he knows very well about the dangers of our intelligence community being turned against, you know, the American people. And of course, if you turn the intelligence community against a sitting and duly elected president, you're turning it against the American people. And of course, he's made no secret that he believes the Central Intelligence Agency was involved in the murder of his uncle.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure he would have some pretty sobering thoughts about what happened to his father as well. But I want to have you listen to this, and then we'll get into these PowerPoint slides that are screenshots right out of your book. But this is why I brought this up with you tonight. And this is where you asked me, what are my thoughts? My thoughts are kind of following guys like what I've been hearing more and more from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Let me get your response to this.
Which is, when I was writing my book, one of the, you know, the most momentous and shocking discoveries that I encountered and that I made, you know, in my research was seeing the deep involvement of the intelligence agencies in this public health space. Mm-hmm. The last chapter of my book shows this series of tabletop exercises, about 20 tabletop exercises that took place between 1999, that was sponsored, all of them by the CIA. But involving a lot of, you know, important hundreds of thousands of people took part in these pandemic simulations. And what each one of them did, and by the way, the people who were taking part in them were from Europe, United States, Canada, and the rest of the world, the rest of the Western world. And they, Australia, Mexico, for example, they were public health officials. They were frontline responders. They were people who worked for utilities, hospital systems, politicians. There were big shots at each one. Bill Gates, Madeleine Albright, Tom Daschle, and to give them kind of an imprimatur of legitimacy. But what they each did was they'd take a simulated pandemic and they'd show what the response was. And the response was not a public health response. It was the imposition of totalitarian control. Mm-hmm. So they weren't talking about providing vitamin D to people or stockpiling, you know, or quarantining the sick and, you know, and keeping constitutional rights, which is something that you got to think of in a pandemic, mm-hmm. etc. They weren't doing any of that stuff. What they were doing is, how do we use this pandemic to suppress free speech, to censor social media and the media, to close churches, to lock down society, to force people to wear masks, and then funnel them into the chute of mass vaccination with a quickly created and untested zero liability vaccine. Every one of them does the same thing. None of them is about public health. It's a militarized and monetized response. Mm-hmm. And they're play acting all of these strategies for how do we get Americans to go along with us. Well, the CIA, and you know, has for many, many years has studied ways of doing not only individual manipulation, but doing mass manipulation of society. How do you go into a developing country or an indigenous country, turn the population, cause so economic chaos, shut down the economy, polarize people against each other and create violence and chaos to the point where that country will be happy to have an outside
Machiavellian
entity come in and control the whole thing? And how do you sow fear and use propaganda, etc.? One of the ways the CIA figured out all of these methodologies, which is put in handbook after handbook, and you know, the CIA does not do public health, by the way. It does coup d'etats against democracy. So between 1947 and 1998, the CIA was involved in 87 coup d'etats against a third of the nations on Earth, most of them democracies. So that's what they do. The way that they studied this is they farmed out studies to sociologists at about 300 universities. These were programs called MK Ultra, mm-hmm. MK Surge, Operation Artichoke, etc. But it was all done by the universities, billions and billions of dollars. One of those studies took place in the 1960s and 70s, and it was done by early 1970s by a guy called Stanley Milgram, who was a young associate professor at Yale. And Milgram recruited people from every walk of American life, black people, white people, students, professors, professionals, every kind of American. He would put the subject in a room, sit them on a chair, and there was a dial in front of them. And they were told there was a person in the next room who was tied to a chair. And when they turned this dial, it would administer an electric shock to that person. That person in the other room was actually a Confederate and was an actor. And the doctor, Dr. Milgram, who was wearing a stethoscope and a light, you know, a white lab coat, so he had this kind of imprimatur of authority, he would tell the people, turn it up. They could hear the subject screaming, shouting, pleading, begging, crying in the other room and struggling. And all of the people who recruited begged the doctor to allow them to stop. But the doctor said, no, higher, higher. Well, if you can look this up in Wikipedia and actually reports it accurately, it's called the Milgram experiment. 67% of the people turned it up to 250 volts where it was marked potentially lethal. So they knew not to do that. And every value they had, they had to compromise to do that, but they did it because they were taking orders from somebody that they believed was a trusted authority. Mm-hmm. And that's what Milgram concluded, that if you have somebody who dresses up like a doctor, 67% of the people will violate their most deeply held values. And okay, so we've got, you know, we're just in a huge Milgram experiment here. We got Anthony Fauci and his wife.
Wow. What are your thoughts?
God, he is such a brilliant, brilliant guy putting all of that together. I mean, he's right. It is true that that's what the CIA does to other countries. That's and it's well established. I mean, there's something called the School for the Americas that trains our military, at least, to, you know, subvert other democracies, and all the things we're seeing now are things that, you know, we train our military to do to other countries around the world, you know, to destabilize them, to tenderize them, as they say in the military, to, you know, get them ready for puppets that we're more comfortable with, or for, you know, occupation by our own country. I just don't understand, again, why the CIA would do that to us. But while you were talking, I was also thinking, and while Mr. Kennedy was describing these tabletop exercises, which I've heard of, maybe, you know, it seems clear right now that the post Second World War order, in which we thought we had a world of nation states in which 132 of them were democracies, was kind of a fiction and just waiting for the, you know, the string to be pulled to drop the theatrical curtain, you know, once and for all on what's really underway. And what I mean is, it seems clear that maybe even our military, maybe even our presidents, maybe even people above the heads of our presidents globally have decided that there just isn't going to be any more nation states. There's not going to be any more United States. And everyone is aligned for, everyone of the elites, you know, are aligned for this inexorable transition to a, you know, one world government, totalitarian world order. I've made that case in the Bodies of Others, not as dramatically or as draconian a way, because I didn't know then about the involvement of the Department of Defense with harming us, right? But I'm sure if that is the case, there's a rationale, because this is how these people work, of this is the only way to save the planet, or this is the only way to save humanity. You know, if we don't transition to a one world government, totalitarian global state, then we'll run out of food, we'll run out of clean water, the population will double every 24 years. I mean, at Davos, you know, for the last few years, they've been saying things like this, right? We can't let them, if we leave them to their own devices in their nation states, you know, using fossil fuels, making their own decisions with human rights, there will be no more planet, there will be no more humanity. So to save them, we have to kill them off, and we have to, you know, lock them down, and we have to go into lockstep in this one world government. I mean, that's my best guess.
Yeah, well, I think you're onto something there. You know, whether it's President Kennedy in his, you know, kind of cryptic speech on secret societies and how his administration would not kowtow to the secret societies and the global threats that these societies produced, or whether it's any number of presidents that I've quoted in books and documentaries talking about a secret cabal of people you dare not really whisper above that they found out after they became president, you know, was a powerful group of people, you know. And then you have, of course, as you've said, the World Economic Forum now with their draconian concepts and ideas. It's just makes one wonder if the White House can be captured, why not the other agencies? Why could the Department of Justice not be captured? As I have friends who were formerly high ranking in the FBI, like Terry Turchi, the former Deputy Assistant Director of the Counterterrorism Division of the FBI, who's been in our studio several times, a regular guest, you know, briefing Director Louis Free up on the seventh floor daily, who's out now openly saying and wrote a book about it, that the Department of Justice is now been co-opted. Now they've grabbed the FBI and they've co-opted the FBI, and now they don't promote from within the ranks of the FBI who have the culture and the values of that agency. They start promoting people from the DOJ to come over and run the FBI with Mueller and Comey, and you've destroyed the culture, and now you see it's being used as a political organization that should have been apolitical. So I'm wondering if you could capture the DOJ, capture the FBI, capture the White House, why couldn't you capture, you know, these other agencies as well? And I thought it was kind of odd because it seemed like that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was saying something, and correct me if I'm wrong, but one of our astute producers and writers, Leo Holman, pointed it out to me after I interviewed you the other night. He said, isn't she saying that this has particularly been damaging to America and Europe and Canada, which are really the groups that would be aligned naturally against the CCP? And if that's indeed what you're saying, that's interesting, because there's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. saying the same thing. He just said, Europe, America, Canada, you know, these are the groups where these people came out of, and they're running these exercises. And so it's like, wait a minute. Then you're talking about a lot of very powerful people in key places that have been co-opted to do damage to their own countries.
Yes. Yes. Well, for sure, Mr. Kennedy and I are completely aligned in identifying. And by the way, our books were published in a box set. So
he's
someone that I admire a lot. And, you know, our publishers aligned to get our books out to people together. But for sure, we're aligned in making that case, you know, from different sources, that the West is being targeted in particular ways. To me, something that's very important, I think I brought it up when we last spoke, is that in the Pfizer documents, adverse events, the 42,000 adverse events, yes, I did tell you that, the great majority, the number one group was the United States, then Western Europe, and the smallest tranche was all 50 other nations where this injection was rolled out combined. So that's not random. That means that Western Europe and North America, but especially North America, were targeted.
And which means that you and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. coming to the same conclusion, and maybe not even aware until right now you're coming to the same conclusions.
Well, I think I knew that we both saw, look, it's logic, right? If your goal is, if your goal is global government, that is totalitarian, of course, geopolitically, you have to take out the United States, you have to take out Western Europe, you have to take out Canada and Australia, right? That's just what you have to do. And if you're aligned with China, you know, China's goal is to take out the United States, Western Europe, Canada, and Australia. So it's not surprising, like anyone who's kind of thinking geopolitically or been kind of even, in his case, through heritage, around decision-making at the highest global levels in this country is going to do the chess and reach the same conclusion. You know, and I was around two White Houses and married to a White House speechwriter and now married to a guy with a career in Intel. And, you know, we all reach the same conclusion. Of course, if your goal is world tyranny, you have to kill off the West, and you have to kill off not just the West, but exactly what we're seeing, Western values, Western religion, Western culture, Western children. You have to like just stamp them out. And America, out of all the countries, is the one that has to be reduced to rubble ideologically and economically and materially, because we've always been, you know, since our founding, a light to other nations and a bulwark against tyranny. Even the idea of America has been a bulwark against tyranny. So I definitely agree about all of that. I guess I would say, just in agreement with where you're going, but it's extremely depressing.
Yeah, it is.
The last couple of days have really kind of ratcheted up the level of, you know, horror at what we're looking at, in a way that kind of could shine a light on your premise that you started with here and your question about what's the CIA doing. And what I mean is, in the last few days, we had the revelation by Project Veritas about gain-of-function research, basically, by Pfizer. More disturbingly, instead of Pfizer spinning and, you know, saying, no, we're not doing that, or, you know, that was taken out of context, or, you know, we don't know who this guy is, they issued a press release saying, yeah, basically, we're doing gain-of-function research. And the reason that's so horrifying is that it means that they assume that they're no longer at any risk at all. You know, they assume that they can just bring their plans out in the open and it'll be fine, that they're safe. And that is a very scary thing to infer.
Absolutely.
Right? But it's not just that. I was just on War Room this afternoon, and Joe Allen, who talks about transhumanism, was, you know, talking about AI sort of taking over everything. And I realized, to my horror, that the new release of AI, I don't remember the exact name, chatbot.
The chat GPT.
GPT, thank you. It's the other side. It's the mirror image of Report 54, which I went on War Room to share. I shared it with you last night, I believe, about how Pfizer basically injected or oversaw the injection of, you know, 61 kids, tiny kids, half of them under four, of which 34 sustained adverse events, of which some of those were facial paralysis, kidney failure, and a 7-year-old who had a stroke. And the fact that, you know, we're finally at this kind of black heart of evil in the Pfizer documents, you know, nothing has been worse than that. In a way, nothing could be worse than that. I mean, you can have, you know, atrocities of scale. You could have 100 kids with liver failure. But this, the fact that they did that, you know, that they did a Mengele-type experiment on children and ruined them. And of those kids, 28 of them, we don't even know what happened. Of the 62, we don't even know what happened to them. They just ruled them out, and they could be dead. Like, we just live, they vanish, right? So you put those two together, and they're two sides of the same coin, which is something that doesn't care about human beings fundamentally is in the ascendancy right now.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And it fits with the transhumanism and all that transhumanism and technocracy is about, which of course includes population control or a Malthusian worldview that says there are limited resources and therefore we have to get the population down. The Kissinger report from 74, we can't let the population go over 8 billion. Of course, we just crossed that, which I find very interesting. I just stumbled three days ago. I just stumbled on a video of John Lennon saying, I don't buy the whole depopulation plan. I'm thinking, wow, you know, that's pretty amazing. I don't know if you've seen it, but I think he's on, I can't remember the famous show he was on, but he was sitting there with his wife, and he said to the host from the 70s, no, I do not buy into the depopulation plan. And he was telling to the audience, don't buy into this, people. Don't buy into this. I'm thinking, here's a guy I probably wouldn't agree with on a lot of issues politically, but man alive, he was speaking up and and being quite bold about it then. And here we are, this same idea, you know, we've got to decide who are the useful eaters, who are not, who are we going to keep around. And now all of a sudden, as you brought it up, ChatGPT, I was interviewing Patrick Wood, who's such an expert on technocracy and transhumanism today. And he was saying, you know, we thought these robots, you know, were going to replace blue collar workers, right? And people working at certain businesses would be no longer needed. Everything's going to be automated. He said, this ChatGPT all of a sudden now puts your job at risk, House. They don't need you. They can now create a computerized newscaster that can deliver the news, and no one will know it's not a real person. He was showing me an article where they're creating supermodels, okay?
Oh my.
And it's not a real person, but you don't know that. You can pick the color of the eye, the shape of the face, the hair color, everything. Design your beautiful chosen supermodel and let them sell your product for you. Pick their voice. You don't need to pay them millions of dollars. Now you add that to, let's have our newscasters be this ChatGPT. Now we can have our accountants, our attorneys, our books, our newspapers, I mean, you know, are written by these people. And pretty soon you're like, no wonder they can decrease the brain trust of the population, because they're going to replace it with artificial intelligence that says you're no longer really needed. And we don't have to pay you, and you're gone, and you're not, you know, polluting the earth, and we can get our population down. It's just, the whole thing is almost beyond what our minds can comprehend, being the age I am and seeing how far we've come in technology. Maybe this doesn't compute with today's millennials, but for someone born in 1969, I'm thinking, this has come a long way, you know, in the era I was raised. And, you know, when our video games were Pong, you know, just one little square on either end with a ball going back and forth, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's exactly how I've been feeling the last couple of days, Brandon. It's like something's happening, and this rollout of ChatGPT is definitely like a branded campaign, just like the Pfizer announcement. You know, we don't care. Yeah, we're doing gain of function. It's like a bunch of announcements, multiple directions that humans really don't matter, that the time of humanity is over. I mean, I have to believe that, you know, humans are resourceful. It's not over yet. And we can counter analyze this and organize ourselves in opposition to it. But, you know, like any human being, I'm faced right now with a situation, very kind of atavistic situation, in which, like, we're in the forest, there's a new predator in the forest, and we don't even understand what it is, you know, let alone how to fight it. That's how I'm feeling.
Absolutely.
So,
let's go to your book. This is the first screenshot. We're not going to have time to get through all these screenshots. I want to be mindful of your time, particularly since you're, I'm sure, very uncomfortable with having broken a collarbone, and I appreciate your making time to be with us and all the interviews you're doing. Folks, this is for her brand new book that just came out. You can get it at dailyclout.io. Logan, I don't know if you have the screenshot of the cover of the book, but we'll put it up there at some point. Daily, there he goes. Dailyclout.io is where you can get it and print it out, buy it, download it, and we encourage you to do that. Here's the first screenshot I have. You talk about safety issues. Contrary to public statements by Pfizer and FDA, both were aware of data showing that the vaccine ingredients travel from the injection site through the bloodstream, cross important blood organ barriers, including at the brain, testes, and ovaries, and continue to produce harmful spike proteins for an undetermined amount of time. There's so much there, and you continue to come back to it in a very scientific way as you take these documents that they wanted buried for 75 years, and I'm going to ask you why they wanted to bury them, because you bring it up, and I have it in one of the slides. But the blood organ barrier and penetrating the brain and the spike proteins, and how long do they last? And every time you get another booster, how long do they last in creating more spike proteins? And it seems like it just finally spins out of control. What say you? Are you there? Did we just lose her, Logan? Yep, I think she's frozen. We're going to work to get her back. We are talking to Dr. Naomi Wolf about a brand new book that's just come out, that's taken the 75, well, the documents that Pfizer wanted hidden for 75 years. They wanted it hidden for 75 years. And you have to ask, why did they want it hidden for 75 years? Well, I think this slide right here, while we get her back, I'll answer this. She says in the book, Why did Pfizer want the original documents sealed for 75 years? After 75 years, the documents may be forgotten, or if not forgotten, lost. Released after everyone who received the vaccine is dead. Released after those responsible for bringing the plague upon the world are dead. But the emergency use authorization immunity has an Achilles heel. If the emergency use authorization was granted on fraud, in other words, if Pfizer knew, and all the different Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, if they all knew this was based on fraud, the government is immune from legal action, but Pfizer isn't. Is this why they wanted it hidden for 75 years? You want to respond to that, and then we'll go back to the slide as I was filling, waiting for you to come back.
Yeah, this is, you know, strangely exciting and satisfying, Brannon, because these volunteers have worked so hard for so long, and our editorial staff has worked so hard for so long, and you are the first journalist, you know, apart from the kind of co-producer of this, Steve Bannon, to actually dive into this book and lift out what's newsworthy. So it's kind of a historic moment for us and for me, and I think kind of for America and readers. And what you lifted out, I'm really impressed, because it's a 700-page book. You lifted out two of the most important segments already. The first one says that there's this biodistribution, and, you know, I remember so vividly in 2021, all of these doctors, including relatives of mine, were saying, it's fine. You know, it leaves your body. It doesn't go through your organs. And I remember asking a bunch of doctors I knew, including a quite famous doctor, where does the spike protein go? And they all were guessing. They said things like, well, of course, you digest it and you excrete it. And I'm like, what evidence do you have for that? They were just guessing. It was extraordinary. But the CDC, you know, and everyone, the AMA, was saying, no problem, spike protein, your body eliminates it, right? That's the quote. I've seen it recently from the CDC. Your body eliminates it. Well, sure enough, that was a flat out lie, tragic lie. Dr. Robert Chandler, very distinguished sports medicine physician, who treated the Angels and treated the Lakers, is one of our star experts. He wrote this very important study you just quoted from, in which, or report, in which he saw from the Pfizer documents that within 48 hours, these lipid nanoparticles and spike proteins traverse the entire human body, and they accumulate in various organs: liver, adrenals, spleen, brain, and if you're female, they accumulate in your ovaries. And this is very, very alarming. The other alarming thing is Pfizer didn't follow the biodistribution for very long. So there is no way to see what happens, right, to your organs with that biodistribution. And he said, certainly, there's nothing in the Pfizer documents that shows any mechanism for it leaving the body. And so what this means that people have to understand, and I believe I spoke to you about it before, is that with every injection that you get, first injection, second, booster, second booster, right? The CDC plan was for 6 shots, and some countries, God bless them, like Israel, are up to 5 shots. Every time you get a shot, it's adding lipid nanoparticles, it's adding spike protein, it's adding lipid nanoparticles, adding spike protein to these key organs. And, you know, there's a 13 to 20% drop in live births around the world, and lipid nanoparticles are these industrial fats that are literally packing or gumming up, you know, immobilizing the ovaries and fallopian tubes of women. There's just no other way to say that, and also degrade the testes, as we mentioned last night. So going on to your second quote, also a very important quote. I really so admire your ability to, you know, lift the sound bites from 720 pages. It is absolutely correct that, and you heard Robert Kennedy talking about it, that the PrEP Act gives pharmaceutical companies immunity. And it means that they have no incentive to produce products that work or that don't harm people. They have no incentive because you can't sue them. They're not liable but that's not something we do for any other industry, right? You can't, you know, build a car that could kill people and you can't sue them, or, you know, a house where the roof can fall on your head and you can't sue them. Doesn't happen. But with pharmaceutical industry, it does. So what Ed Dowd pointed out long ago, the BlackRock former hedge, BlackRock hedge fund manager, is that fraud is a way to get around the PREP Act. If you can prove that Pfizer committed fraud, then you can sue them. So we have 250 volunteer lawyers, and we also hired two legal teams, and they found so much fraud in the Pfizer documents that one of our lawyers, George Smith out of Ohio, has five plaintiffs, and is going ahead and suing Pfizer for fraud. And the other set of lawyers out of Los Angeles wrote a legal letter. And I'm sorry, I'm really trying hard to do a really focused presentation here, but my husband stepped out and I just have one arm and I've got a puppy. So.
Well, you know what? It's not going to bother us if the puppy gets into the shot, because our Delta is always around here somewhere. So it's not going to bother our audience. So don't worry about it.
Okay. Well, Delta and Loki can have a virtual play date.
That's right.
But going back to
the studio cat has gotten into the studio on more than one occasion, and while I'm doing serious programming, jumps straight up onto the news desk and right in the middle of live television. That's happened two or three times. So the audience is very used to animals popping up on the set. So don't worry about it.
Studio pets. That's awesome. But so back to your second quote. It's the whole future of what happens now hinges upon that. If we can show, and we now have the ability to, because of these 3,500 volunteers, that Pfizer committed fraud, they can be sued. And they can be sued so abundantly now with all of the death and destruction and infertility and mutilation of children that, hopefully they could be destroyed as a company. In fact, I have very good news on that front. Pfizer issued fourth quarter earnings, and they're down $43 billion.
Woo.
And that's in the month of January since, I have to note, since the book came out. I don't know if the book's appearance impacted those earnings, because I'm not sure what space of time they're measuring and if there's a delay in announcing the earnings, but they are significantly down. They're expecting COVID-related products to tank in 2023.
Wow. I want to remind our audience, because this gets deep real quick, what is mRNA? And I went to the internet real quick. In molecular biology, the mRNA is a single-stranded molecule of RNA that corresponds to a genetic sequence of a gene and is ready by a ribosome in the process of synthesizing a protein. All right, so we all kind of remember biology and whatnot. Well, with that being said, I want to make sure we have the context. Here's what she says in her book. Although mRNA occurs naturally in the body and degrades quickly, Pfizer modified the vaccine RNA so that it continues making spike proteins for an untested duration. So they don't know how long. It produces more numerous spike proteins in untested amounts. And three, it disables the body's normal immune reactions. How many times have we been talking about that, folks, over the last, since early 2020, started interviewing doctors on this. They're talking about how they're going to produce a shot. They're going to produce a shot, and you watch, it'll attack the person's immune system. That was early 2020. We started interviewing people about that. Normal immune reactions, which may suppress immunity to other diseases, such as viruses and cancer. Despite such significant modifications to the vaccine mRNA, Pfizer did not perform the normal studies measuring duration of the mRNA or spike proteins or the doses of spike proteins produced by the, Moderna mRNA or mod RNA?
I'm not sure. I would guess Moderna and RNA.
Yeah. So again, they didn't do the testing. And then you go on from there to describe during the vaccine rollout in early 2021, cases of myopericarditis, inflammation of the heart lining and muscle, were reported to Pfizer. And 1 month before the emergency use authorization for teens was granted, which was May of 2021, a peer-reviewed study showed that 35 teenagers had suffered myocarditis after their Pfizer vaccines in August 2021. After millions of teens had received the vaccine, the FDA, CDC, and Pfizer issued the warning about myocarditis risk in teens. And of course, on my Worldview Report newscast every night, as is tonight, I'm sadly reporting on one teenager after another dropping and dying while doing something physical, generally a sport, basketball, football, something like this. So we got issues where they knew and they didn't, they knew or they didn't do the proper studies. But this whole idea of it creating this almost continuous assembly line of spike proteins that attack the immune system, this means that in addition to all the people that are suddenly dying, this, I would venture to guess, sadly to say, over the next few years, we are going to see the spike in cancers, autoimmune disease, I don't know what else, but we're going to see a lot of very, very sick people. Those that didn't die, who had too many of these shots, their immune system is going to start breaking down, attacking itself, and they're not going to be able to fight off viruses and cancers, because I guess cancer cells are in all our bodies and counts on our bodies to fight it off. This is far from over, right, Naomi? The worst is yet to come, sadly, right?
Well, from what our volunteers have found, that is correct, sadly. I mean, you're so good at finding the headlines. I'm going to go ahead and take notes on the headlines you found, because those are the key points of the book. The messenger RNA excerpt that you read, and just to remind everyone, these are other people's work, right? These are six teams of experts with kind of a meta committee of experts reviewing the experts, and then they come to the Daily Clout team, and then we edit them. So I didn't write these. I'm not that smart. It's these scientists and medical experts who wrote these reports. I just helped to edit them. But what you just shared, the second to last quote, Brannon, is really important, because this team did find something so newsworthy. And I know Dr. Robert Malone had also been talking about it, but you know, we were told over and over and over again that the mRNA doesn't affect our DNA. And they found that that was not true. And as you just quoted also, they found that indeed the spike protein is like a factory that produces more spike proteins.
Right.
Usually when something bad, you're exposed to something bad or something bad enters your body, you know, you have an immune system, your body fights it off or you die pretty much, right? And this bizarrely, because I don't know anything else that affects the human body this way, except maybe parasites, you know, this seems to enter the body and then just make more and more of itself or cause more and more problem. And I remember when I was first reading like Moderna's press kit about how great the spike protein was, and they said it enters every cell in the body. And I thought, well, I'm not taking that, right? Because think about all the things your cells do, you know, and again, I'm not a medical doctor, but I took eighth grade biology. I know how nerves work. You know, they depend on electrical conduction. If it enters every cell in the body, how is that going to affect the nerves? You know, I know how babies are, you know, how gestation works and how a fetus turns into a baby in its mother's womb. How is a spike protein entering the placenta going to affect the baby? You know, every single bit of your body has a purpose. And Moderna was boasting that the spike protein enters every cell in your body and changes its function. And like literally, I read that and thought, okay, you think you're smarter than God. How has that worked out in the past? There's no way a human being, the smartest human beings in the world, could create something that enters every cell in the human body and nothing's going to go wrong. And I can't believe that, you know, millions of, and billions of people didn't reach the exact same conclusion I did reading the same material, but you know, they didn't, like there was a giant hypnosis. But who thinks that's a good idea, to change every cell in the body, to enter every cell in the body? Moving on. So you're right, the spike protein does proliferate, and it does appear, and we're starting to see it now, that, and I say this with a lot of pain, because people I really love are vaccinated and multiply vaccinated.
Yes, yes.
So it's not like, oh, that's horrible and it's over. It does seem to be, that's horrible, and how is this going to affect 22-year-olds in 5 years?
Yeah.
How is it going to affect healthy 50-year-olds in 2 years? It does appear that the spike protein ruins things over time, just like lipid nanoparticles ruin things over time.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but there's so much here, just a few minutes more. Pfizer, sure. This is right again from her book, folks. Pfizer did not disclose that its COVID-19 vaccine ingredients included microRNAs. which are an important natural component of gene expression and regulation and are associated with many diseases as well as a person's immunity. These microRNAs coming from outside the body, such as in Pfizer's vaccine, alter the delicate balance among these naturally occurring molecules, with the potential for harmful health consequences that Pfizer has not studied. So, folks, you're guinea pigs if you're taking this shot. Pfizer's phase 3 trial in humans was supposed to compare, now this is where I think we're getting into a cover-up, compare the vaccine group against the control group receiving the placebo for 2 full years in order to measure the safety of the vaccine. But Pfizer eliminated most of the control group after 4 months. Folks, it's supposed to have lasted for 2 years. But after right. 4 months, they got rid of the control group by vaccinating those who had received the placebo injection. This removes the vital opportunity for measuring whether the vaccines are causally connected with other poor health conditions that develop after vaccination. They knew enough to know they need to destroy the control group. I think this is a cover-up.
I couldn't agree with you more. And again, I've got to credit you, Brannon. I hadn't noticed. I knew that had happened. The volunteers, obviously, I edited that. The volunteers called my attention to that. And I thought, well, this is disgusting. But I hadn't thought of it in terms of a cover-up. And you're absolutely right. And I would go further in this discussion and say the drive to, you know, the hatred aimed at the unvaccinated, the shutting them out of society, not letting them buy groceries, saying they couldn't get medical care, shaming them, calling them stupid. Maybe in retrospect, that was the same thing on a massive scale. Get rid of the control group, right? Because now we see what's happening. Unvaccinated people are fine, thank God. And vaccinated people are getting sick. And it's now being borne out in, you know, even in the studies of who's in the hospital, who's getting really sick, who's getting COVID. It's vaccinated people. And if they had just managed to vaccinate all of us, it would just be like, oh, bad luck. That's really bad wave of COVID. But because we're fine, you know, the worst they fear is happening, which is it's becoming obvious to everyone because there's a control group that something's wrong with the vaccine. And, you know, so to unblind the unvaccinated, to unblind the study and vaccinate the control group, the people who got the placebo, I want everyone to just remember eighth grade biology for 1 minute. And you've got to remember what you were taught about what is an experiment, right? An experiment isn't that the scientists know who is, you know, who got the real injection, who got the placebo. It's that they're blinded. It's double blinded. They don't know, right? You don't kind of get rid of the control group by giving them the same treatment as the non-control group. That makes it not a control group. So I just kind of want to remind everyone what a real experiment in real science is, and that this is not that. And Brannon's exactly right. It got rid of the evidence, essentially.
And here comes the big punch. In her book and her team put together at dailyclout.io, this property of the mRNA lipid nanoparticle delivery is utilized in many medications and, in fact, forms the basis of utilizing such delivery systems for chemotherapy for brain tumors. Now, this is very important, folks. We're talking about brain tumors, melanomas, you know, cancers. Now, this is very important because these are people, many of them, who are going to die, okay? So you go ahead and you do things that you normally would not do for the average person, but for someone who's terminal, you don't have a lot of choices, so you're fighting to save them. Therefore, it was known that the vaccine injection would not stay at the injection site. Stating that the vaccine would stay at the injection site is a lie of commission. And this information was not evaluated. It could not be concluded that the vaccine was safe. And it goes on from there to show that what they were doing was what you normally do to someone by giving them something that would break that brain-blood barrier is normally something you would do to someone that was terminal.
Right.
Now they're doing something to healthy children, teenagers, young adults that you would not do to someone unless they were terminal to break the brain-blood barrier.
Right.
This is, again, we're back to Nazi Dr. Mendela stuff. Are you kidding me? We're injecting babies and teenagers that are perfectly healthy with a form of medicine and technology that you wouldn't do unless you were just desperately trying to save someone that was already on the terminal track. Do I have this wrong?
No, you have it exactly right. And it's not an accident. Lipid nanoparticle technology has been around for more than 10 years. And it was designed to cross the blood-brain barrier, as I found out from Dr. Malone and then looked it up, and it's correct. It is used, exactly. It has been used to deliver, you know, medicine to the brain tumor in people who have a brain tumor and are going to die if their tumor doesn't shrink. So, of course, you take extreme measures, you take extreme risks in that situation. But you're exactly right that everyone knew that this technology would cross the blood-brain barrier and that it was only used in situations of, you know, dire, desperate, near, you know, looming fatality. And they decided to inject it into the bodies of everyone, including tiny babies and little children, healthy young adults, and it crosses the blood-brain barrier. And you know, as we discussed the last time we spoke, it inflames the brain, right? It inflames and damages the brain. I mean, Dr. Flowers basically said that a lot of people are walking around who are brain damaged now and don't realize it because of this inflammation. I mean, just think about it mechanistically. In some ways, it's been a blessing that I'm not a medical doctor or a scientist, because the mechanics of what's going on are at the forefront of what I see, because I, you know, I don't, I'm not trained in the nuances of the science, but just mechanically, you're sending an industrial fat coated in a petroleum byproduct, polyethylene glycol, into the blood. It thickens the blood, and it goes through the blood-brain barrier into the brain and damages the brain, inflames the brain, and then it circulates throughout the body, lodges in the spleen, lodges in the ovaries and testes and in the adrenals, and accumulates there. So you're kind of, I mean, Dr. Chandler said something very powerful in our last interview when he said it's like a shotgun blast. Lipid nanoparticles are like a shotgun blast throughout the body. And that's what you're doing. And so, like, look at how people feel now, Brannon. Like, it completely maps up with the mechanism of this technology and the explanations that the volunteers give in this ebook. People feel awful, and they feel awful in a vast range of ways, right? Inside the Pfizer documents, the side effects are not the ones the CDC discloses, like fatigue or, you know, a bit of pain at the injection site or, you know, a little nausea, a little dizziness. The side effects are joint pain is the number one side effect. People don't know this. I know so many people who are limping, are, you know, have knee surgery, young, healthy people whose knees just gave out. Right. I see people. It's dramatic. You go back to New York City. I went back after everyone got injected and I was taken aback because at scale, otherwise, like, visibly recently healthy people were limping or on crutches or looked like they were in pain, like mechanical pain, arthritic kind of pain. A second side effect is muscle pain, myalgia, right? People don't talk about this. I know two different people, healthy, fit, you know, men in their 50s took good care of themselves their whole lives, who suddenly are in agony, you know, their muscles ache so badly that they can barely move. And it's the second most common side effect. The third gigantic category in the Pfizer documents, and there's an essay about this in the book, are neurological. Parkinson's, tremors, spasms, seizures, so many neurological events. And as I mentioned, you know, I didn't take it because I have a neurological condition. And I, as I mentioned, I know how nerves work. And indeed, Dr. Flowers did analysis at my request, and it's in the book, and he found that the lipid nanoparticles degrade the myelin sheath of the nerves. And that's where the electrical impulses are conducted that tell your nerves what to do, you know, how to contract correctly, how to obey your brain. Well, people are having things happen to them they don't understand, like weakness and you know, convulsions and shaking and, you know, these facial paralyses, the Bell's palsy. These are all neurological events, dementias at scale. And sure enough, they're all represented in the FISA documents. They're all explained by our volunteers who have looked at the mechanism of how these ingredients work.
And we're going to see dementia and Alzheimer's increasingly in younger and younger people. And it's gonna be shocking. I want to give one more slide and let you go because you've been very gracious with your time. One more slide. The heart. This is again from her book that her team put together. The heart of the vaccine is modified mRNA. mRNA tells the cell to produce the spike protein. I'm going to jump down there where it's highlighted. For mRNA vaccines, it is critical to monitor the integrity of the full molecule and that the strict guidelines are followed when administering the vaccine. This is an impossible standard, given the large number of facilities and different level personnel administering the vaccine. The failure to set up routine quality assurance standards and the huge number of facilities administering the vaccine precludes an assessment of the appropriate handling of the vaccine to ensure stability. Therefore, and it's in black, therefore, it is not correct to state that the vaccines are safe as this aspect is not monitored. There's no way this could be safe. They know it. They know that this thing is dangerous. They stopped their control group. These people want it buried for 75 years because the government might be immune, but the drug company, Pfizer, is not. Fraud eviscerates everything, right?
Yeah. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And also, you know, with a new majority in Congress, I don't see why we have to keep being bound by the same laws, the same bad laws that were passed in previous administrations. Tomorrow, the Republican majority could pass a law removing the impunity from pharmaceutical companies and saying they're liable. They could do it tomorrow. You know, they could create a new bill. And in fact, there, if you look at BillCam, which is on Daily Clout, my website, it's a database that shows legislative activity and socially shareable bills, you'll see that the top 10 trending bills, like three of them are really good bills to remove legal impunity from pharmaceutical companies. So, you know, let me now, if anyone's listening who's a member of Congress, in the majority or in the minority, you know, go ahead and take one of these bills. They're already written. There are already draft bills out there. Just pass it. And we wouldn't even have to have these painful conversations. These people could have some relief for the years of medical care they're going to need, for the loss of their loved ones, for the loss of their ability to work, disabilities at scale. We've got to pass that legislation.
Absolutely. DailyClout.io, DailyClout.io. Show the cover of her book again there, Logan, if you would, that her and her team put together. They took all these Pfizer documents that they wanted buried for 75 years. There it is. You can get it at DailyClout.io. Thank you for being so gracious with your time, particularly with your breaking your collarbone there. I know that's got to be painful. You've been gracious. Thank your husband for us as well. And, you know, people love these long format interviews. We've gotten so many people saying thank you for having her on and just letting her talk, because to watch her brilliance of her mind working and her thinking, you know, on a natural flow and just watch what happens, you know, to give her opportunity to do that. Our audience has been really impressed with your mind and watching it work. And so we've got a lot of comments of people just wanting to watch your thinking process and your responding and how you methodically think about it and then respond. And it's very, very, enlightful. And we really thank you for all you're doing.
Well, Brandon, thank you and your team so much. And I thank the audience as well. It's a privilege for me to have the chance to talk these things through at the length they deserve. And again, I have to say, I'm so grateful to you for being the first journalist to go through these 720 pages and lift out what I'm so impressed you've lifted out as the absolutely key elements, the headlines. I mean, there are, you know, dozens more, and I'm sure we'll have other chances to talk about
them. Oh yeah, I'm not done. I'm not done.
But I'm happy to come on anytime, but you did an amazing job lifting out what's truly earth shattering about what these volunteers have done.
Thank you for that. But if you and your team had to put it together, I wouldn't have anything to have lifted from. So it's a team effort. So thank you.
It certainly is. Thank you so much, Brandon.
Thank
have
you.
A great night.
You too. Dr. Naomi Wolf checking in. Check out her site, dailyclout.io, folks. You got to get this. You got to read it. And, you know, I just wish I had more time today and last night to read more, because there's so much more there. I'm going to do more. Fascinating and a great interview. Appreciate her so much. dailyclout.io.